Hello, I'm Jeremy Rivera, your unscripted podcast host. I'm here with Rachel Eisman. Why don't you give yourself an introduction? And this is a big one. I want you to tell us why we should trust you by talking a bit about your experience and expertise.
Oh, that is a good start. Hi, Jeremy. Thank you for having me. My name is Rachel Eisman, and I run a business called Jolie Residential. And I have been in business for almost 17 years now. So that in itself, I think, says a little bit about trust. We have a big list of clients who continue to use us at this point, which is, I think, really unique in the move management space because people think, oh, you move once every handful of years. And we actually have a fair amount of repeat business. I mean, 60% of our work year over year is referral from repeat or a repeat client, which I think in and of itself says that we are a pretty cool company to work with.
So the main focus of the services that you provide are residential and move, taking people's belongings, moving them to a new home or homes. Is that the foundational work?
That's the basic gist, but it's actually more than that. We cover the actual full life cycle of the move. So one of the sticky points that we come to is people hear move and they think boxes and furniture onto a truck and offloaded at the new space, which is a part of what we do. But if you think about it, it's like this much of the full life cycle of the move. The reason people hate moving, I think, is because it's months ahead of time. It's months after the actual move day. So Jolie Residential is here to really solve that problem. Like, we come in as project managers to hold the hands of our clients from the time they're talking to their realtor about what are all the things to get the house ready to put on the market. What do we need to do with all the stuff inside? How much of it is going to the new house? How much of it needs to either be donated or consigned or be shipped to a daughter in California or whatever all of those details are? How much packing needs to be done? What are the right packing supplies? Do we need specialty vendors like art craters or piano movers or chandelier movers? So we handle all of those details all the way through. And I think what makes us really unique is that our team is all professional organizers and interior designers. So it's a much more intensive process working with the homeowner. What are the systems that you need set up so that your life really flows on the other side when you get to the new house the way you want it to? You have three kids to get out the door in the morning. You know, where are we putting water bottles and backpacks and how is that going to flow? So it's more than just a move. And when people think move, they think that truck piece. And we manage that piece, but it's only one piece of the overall scope of what we handle.
One of my favorite moves I've ever done was where I was supposed to have three other people show up, including my mother-in-law, and they all bowed out.
Right?
So I literally had to move all of my furniture myself with hand trucks and dollies, which is not recommended for long health and duration of your spine.
It's not only back-breaking, but it's also fairly humbling, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And you're right, there is definitely a component. I think I'd like for you to talk about the home design component, because I'm sure that that involves quite a bit more, because you're taking the existence within one house and, you know, pictures that might work here, maybe after a conversation, maybe that one, you know, goes up for sale or goes to a friend or doesn't quite make it. So what does that process of having the design conversation play out?
So I am an interior designer by trade. That was my degree. So space planning, functional planning, and then the organization of how it all flows together is really important. And it's something that you get when working with us that you don't get with a lot of other companies without specifically hiring an interior designer. But it's exactly what you mentioned. It's, does this piece of art work in the new space? Is this what we want? How is that going to translate? Because very rarely do you translate A to A in the other house, right? Mm-hmm. The spaces are different. The room sizes are different. You may have a room that you didn't have in the other house. So all of that is part of the conversation with people. What do you really want? What do you really do? What do you need? And how can we make it as optimal as possible for you? The other nice thing is I've still maintained a lot of my trade accounts. So if we need to get a new rug for this room or a different piece of storage furniture or something like that, we can do it. I want to be careful to say that we are not interior designers. So we do not take on full design projects, like a whole house interior design, because that is, it's really a whole different animal. But we can certainly use our design experience to help through that process. And you'd be amazed how many times a client has in their head, oh, we're going to put this sofa and this table and that chair in this room. You're like, well, that room's a little small for it. And they're like, well, I think we can all fit. And really, when you put it all down on a floor plan and show people, okay, technically these pieces of furniture fit in the room, but you won't be able to open the door. You know, it turns out those are important things to know ahead of time rather than using the move day to futz with furniture placement.
As a small business owner, what's been the biggest joy out of committing yourself to this particular niche and focus?
I mean, joy is the word. It's the way our clients feel at the end of it. Because it is such a new concept to people, they didn't know this was possible, right? And at the end of the project, they're just like, that was the best move of my life. I had no idea it could be that way. And that feeling, you know, when people say, would you still do what you do if you didn't get paid? And I think I'd do it for that. Now, we do need to get paid because I have a lot of other people to pay and my team is paying every penny. But it's that magical moment. There's one other thing that I really love about this work is that moment at the end of move day when we've spent, you know, a week in the house prior, packing everything. We've had a team. There's been a cacophony of sound and music and dancing. And we try to make it a really joyful process the whole time. And then move day happens and you have eight men lifting furniture and boxes. And it's a lot of back and forth. And it's just this whole dance, this whole symphony of sound and bodies. And when the truck finally pulls out of the driveway, headed to the next house, and I get to do the final walkthrough to make sure every cabinet's truly empty, everything, you know, that needed to move is gone. And the house has this incredible silence to it, right? Like after all of that busyness and all of that energy, and there's just this almost like, right? And it's such a beautiful moment in moving that I don't think most people get to experience.
I love that. I'm curious, what are some of the challenges or problems that you experienced in your life before starting this business that's kind of informed some of your approaches to structuring your business, choosing how far to stretch those services, what to include and exclude? You know, you've kind of hit a niche which I don't think is widely known about or populated, so you kind of have kind of an advantage there. What were some of the things that you overcame that gave you lessons that you're applying to what you're doing now?
That's such a good question. I think the most direct correlation is just working with home service providers. Previous to starting this business, I owned my first home and I was in my 20s and, you know, you'd need a plumber or you'd need a painter or a sheetrock guy or an electrician or whatever it was. It just could be challenging sometimes working with those guys and not knowing if you're getting the right end of the deal or, you know, there's a lot of unfortunately negative press about home service providers. And so I feel like there's this aspect of everybody's out to get me, which is truly a case of one or two bad apples spoil the bunch, because for the most part, in having done this nearing 20 years now, it's only a couple of people, but they get such a bad rap and they put such a bad rap on the industry. Knowing that we can come in and we can remove any of that anxiety from the homeowner in this part of their journey, right? Like they're going to have to deal with a bunch of service providers through the life cycle of a move. And we get to turn what's historically a B2C into kind of a B2B, right? Because the painter's talking to us. The landscaper's talking to us, and then we're able to relay that back to the homeowners. But we really get to be the homeowner's representative. And I think back to the times that I was super stressed, you know, and I didn't know, is this an appropriate quote? Is it not an appropriate quote? But we do know that because we see these quotes all day long. We know what's, you know, kind of right and wrong in the industry and who the good people are to work with. And so that's, I think, the most direct correlation. But I'm just a lover of people. You know, and I love service. And if there's a way that I can get in there and help somebody out and say, yeah, I'll do that. Okay, sure. Let's make it easy for you. You know, I'm happy to jump in and figure that out. And I think that spirit is the core of what we do.
Now, is this the first business that you've owned, or are there prior entrepreneurial adventures that you've conquered in the past?
So technically, this is the first and only business I've owned. However, it's the third iteration. So it began as an interior design business. And then there was a point where clients kept calling after the job was over for, you know, how do we maintain this? Can you send your electrician to do that? Okay, now I want the, you know, and those things weren't necessarily included in the original design scope. And so I was like, well, let's just do a fractional home management arm to this. And so then fractional home management became a big part of the business. And then one of those home management clients was moving and he said, hey, will you just do this for me? I'm going to go skiing in Europe and I don't want to deal with it. I was like, okay, you know, that service heart, right? Coming back to, sure, I'll help. I'll figure it out. And I just found it so much fun. Like it tickled all of the things that I love, right? It's logistics, it's planning, it's the creativity with the design and the layout and where things are going, but it's also working with a team. And at the end, it wraps up in a nice, tidy bow, and the homeowner was thrilled. So
it's nice to find a niche where it's got like a specific start and finish. And here's the boundaries and you can keep them pretty snug and secure. So scope creep is always a challenge to address as a business owner and deciding, you know, I was just having this conversation with Laurent industry and niche, but we were talking about having to decide where the boundaries are. How big of fish are you willing to wheel in?
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes your eyes can be bigger than your mouth and you go and you take on something that's outside a scope and then that ends up being its own additional scope. So is your choice with your company right now to view it as more of a lifestyle business than trying to, say, maximize profitability and scale and grow and take on every comer all the time?
It seems like a little bit of a trick question. You know, yes, it's a lifestyle business, but also I think there's room to scale and grow. I feel like it would be selfish to hold it just for ourselves once I know how much we really help people in what is realistically one of the most stressful periods of their life. I think we do want to scale. We do want to grow and make sure more people know that this is an option. Now, that said, you know, I don't necessarily need this to be the next Apple or whatever that is. But I do think that there's room to help more people, and that matters to me.
Birth, death, moving, I believe, are the top three most stressful events, according to surveys in the United States.
Yeah.
So, you know, being the midwife.
There we go. I like that.
Birthing a new home, definitely, I could see the desire of wanting to do that. You know, do more of that. But you do seem to have some defined boundaries of, hey, we're not going to do a full interior design posture for the entire new house.
Right. Like
that's a separate scope. Is that a totally different business? Do you refer that out or?
Yeah, we can refer that out. I mean, I feel like I kind of grew up in my career here in Atlanta with a bunch of the designers. And so I have a great network of people to refer when someone's looking for a full home design.
I'm curious with that nexus of, you know, interacting with these other businesses on a B2B basis. What's your advice for other fledgling entrepreneurs to make the most of that networking, to make the most of those B2B relationships? Are there any do's or don'ts to ensure that you hit the right notes, make the right demands to get the best outcome for your client, but also both of you as a business owner?
So definitely use your network and also trust your instincts, right? I think we get a little bit of a sense of people the first time we meet them. And if you meet them at a networking event or somewhere out, you'll get a sense of who they are. And the ones that register highly, you should meet up with them and then also check their background and their referrals and who's worked with them. How has the process gone? You know, for me, it's really important that we work with really good people, meaning they're good at their job, but they're also good people, right? They want to do honest work. They're going to bring things to your attention, even if it's outside of the scope. Hey, I noticed X, Y, and Z. You may want to get that checked, right? Because everybody's working together with the goal of the best outcome for the client. So when meeting new people, I just ask questions, you know, about how they work. What are some of their favorite jobs? What would they do in these situations? And I have no problem interviewing electricians or plumbers or move companies well before I plan to use them, just to have a sense of who they are. And sometimes that comes back too. And, you know, like, oh, I heard of this person who, you know, and they're sending me a referral, that person's moving or whatever. And then I try to take care of my vendors just as much as I take care of my clients and my teammates, because I think when people know you care about them, they want to do better for you. And therefore, that translates to better outcomes for the client.
Curious. I've consulted for a number of different home service businesses, you know, reconstruction, building sunrooms, you know, delivering concrete walls for residential homes. But all of them seem to have seasons worked into their game plan. What does the seasonality look like for your business?
So we are actually in the slow season. January and February tend to be a little bit slower for us, which when I first started the business was a little distracting because I thought, oh my gosh, what's happening? But now I take it as a really nice opportunity to wrap up the previous year, do some planning for this year. And then by March, you know, things are really picking up. And we stay really busy, honestly, through December. And it's pretty amazing to know now that I have that kind of seasonality and to be comfortable with it, because by the time we get through the end of December, it's exhausting. And it's nice to have a moment that's a little bit like, okay, we can breathe for just a couple minutes before we, you know, jump back in full force. Also a good time to take vacation.
Yeah.
Because everybody's done all their travel in December or leading up to the holidays. So flights a lot of times in January and February are cheaper. It's an easy time. I feel like there aren't as many people out wherever you're choosing to go. So that's a little win.
Nice. That is a nice bonus. And it comes down to, you know, that work-life balance. How are you working with that balance in your life? Is it a myth or is it something that you, you know, try to achieve for yourself? Or where are you at when,
do people
when it comes
laugh
to that
every
phrase?
Time you say that? Because I don't know. I mean, I try. But the reality is, I have big goals. There's a lot I want to create. And I often find myself on my computer 7, 8, 8:30 at night. And then I'm like, oh, I guess it's time to get ready for bed, you know? But it's also fun. And it doesn't feel like a slog. Some days it does. But most of the time, it just feels like, okay, I'm getting to the next thing. This is exciting. Let's keep moving forward. But also the advantage of having your own business is you can say, hey, I need, you know, a Tuesday afternoon off just for personal time. Or I've gotten more in tune with myself and my warning signs.
Uh-huh.
And if I start to feel the burnout coming, I'll just, you know, schedule a 4-day weekend for myself or something along those lines. I'm also learning, in the process of learning, that rest is actually as productive as everything else, which I think is a hard lesson to learn because we have such a hustle culture, you know?
Yes.
And there's always been guilt. I was sick in January for about 3 weeks. And while being sick in itself is miserable, I was fighting myself to allow myself to rest, to just like the negative self-talk and the guilt about you should be doing more. And this is the time where you're supposed to be planning all the things for the year. But essentially, this is what my body does if I don't pay attention, is it will shut me down, right? So
yes.
If I can schedule in the rest, hopefully it's on my terms and not, you know, the body just saying, all right, you're done for a little while.
No, my wife is the same way. Like if she doesn't get stopped, you know, she's going to go until she's stopped. Her body stops her.
So yes.
Taking that time, you know, might achieve more things on your list. But your checklist might be more centered and realistic if you take a minute to rest and come back versus just pushing through and, oh, I got to do this. Okay, keep going.
Yeah.
Rest.
Well, I feel like it's actually, I move faster. I think better when I'm well rested, you know? I mean, that's why people say vacations are so nice and they come back and they're refreshed and they have great ideas while they're off on vacation. And You know, it really is an inspiring time, not just from the aspect of seeing new things or being outside of your environment, but just allowing your body to get out of that grind. And I think it's really important. I'm trying to do better. It's easy to say.
It is. Yeah, there's a lot of things. Oh, I'm on a podcast. I'm totally doing all these things and then running yourself into a corner. It's fine. I'm curious about your experience as a small business owner when it comes to marketing. It seems to me, as an industry professional, I've been doing SEO for 19 years, that it is an insanely complicated game now for small business owners to figure out how to position themselves, what type of marketing material is going to resonate, how much time out of your day do you need to create TikToks, Instagram posts, Facebook posts, Twitter posts, oh wait, X, no, it's this, LinkedIn, Substack, I need to create this, oh, how's my website, do I send any emails? It seems to me there's more and more stacked on your plate as far as opportunities or proposed opportunities or ideas of opportunities. What's been your experience in what's working, what's true, and what is hustle culture fluff and oversell or predatory birds trying to come in and peck and say, I can do this, I can do that for you. And it's oversold. They're trying to get their money. What's your experience on that side?
Well, I have been really lucky in that almost all of our growth has been word of mouth for really the past it was about 2 years ago that I was like, okay, let's start looking into some scalable things, some marketing that can get us to a new level. Because when all of your referrals and all of your new clients are coming from past clients or people you know, that's fantastic. And it really starts you off, you know, 80% sold. However, it also keeps your pipeline almost fixed, right? So I started exploring marketing options a couple of years ago, and I've made some mistakes. I've trusted some people. I was like, oh, you're a marketing person. You know more than I do. You think Google Ads are the way to go? Okay, I'll trust you. Nope. Turns out people aren't looking at us on Google Ads. Like, in fact, when the first couple months came back, they were like, this is extraordinarily low. And I was like, cool. Cool. So, you know, there's some guilt with the idea that you're wasting money, but you try to reframe it with the idea that it's all part of life university or business university, right? That's the cost of tuition in the marketing game. I did some paid advertisements last year in a magazine, a local magazine, for the first time. Who knows? How do you track what happens from that? You know, I put QR codes in to see if they click to certain pages on the website. Didn't necessarily get any clicks through the QR codes, but I don't also scan QR codes in magazines, so can't really blame people. So I would say I'm in an experimental phase. I cannot tell you what works. I think the thing that's been best for us is really doing good work and having our clients want to refer us, but that's not a marketing strategy. So let's talk again in 3 more years and see if I have a better answer.
Fantastic. I'm going to give you a soapbox, and you can stand on this soapbox and sound off and say what you're passionate about and what you think other people should know right now. Anything you'd like in business, in life, general advice, or, you know, toilet paper should be red, whatever.
I don't know that I can agree with that. Toilet paper should definitely be over, though, not the under kind. It's the over kind. That's the way for toilet paper. So I will tell a little story of where I think I failed a potential client recently as my soapbox. And I went out, I met with the client, you know, did the usual talk about what we do and how we do it and why we're different than movers, and presented the estimate. And she was like, okay, let me talk to my husband, and got back to me. And she's like, you know, I just think this is more than we need to spend because we're not moving that much furniture. And I thought, oh, it's not the furniture. It's not the furniture that's the hard part in a move, right? I mean, that wraps up, gets on a truck, and comes off all in the same day. It's 300 plus hours you spend packing boxes, right? It's that labor that people don't think about when they think about a move. And So my soapbox is there's so much more to it than the furniture and the boxes that go on the truck.
Yeah.
You as the person moving, and you can attest to this from your last move, I'm sure, there are 1,000 different decisions that you're having to make. You know, you're looking at the new place. You're trying to figure out how you're getting out of this place. If you have to do any repairs to the place you're leaving or any repairs to the place you're going, you're talking to all of these contractors. You are in the middle of a sale with a realtor, which is not something that everybody does all the time. It's stressful from the amount of money that's going out the door. There are so many layers to moving, and yet it seems to distill down for people to the furniture that's going, you know? And if you open your kitchen cabinets, we probably use roughly 50 to 75 boxes for a standard kitchen. Packing those boxes, right?
Yeah.
It's a lot of fragiles. It's glassware. It's plates. It's, you know, things that you want protected. And so if I could stand on that soapbox and scream at the top of my lungs, it's consider every other aspect of the move than just the furniture.
Makes sense, because I, you know, after that move, because unfortunately or fortunately, me and my wife, we had moved, I'd say roughly on par about 15 times as a married couple until we landed at our house where we've been now for 3 years, and we don't plan on leaving. We're going to die here. You know, in those moves, eventually we finally realize, okay, well, you know, we're not going to do the whole cardboard box thing. We're going to have plastic boxes delivered, which helped. But it was also as much about like getting everything within those securely. And we broke some fragile stuff and we kind of missed some of those things. So I could definitely see a value in thinking, you know what, if I'm going to consider, you know, and in my top three best moves, were three fantastic movers. But my one worst move was they came, they moved our stuff, they moved it across the country, and then jacked up our price by an extra $1,000 once everything was loaded. That was just our pre-estimate before it was on the truck. And, you know, I had a pregnant wife already in the car, the dog's in the car. Fine. Just let me get ripped off. And then for them to deliver half of the furniture 3 days late, and we didn't have a bed for 3 days. So, you know, while I definitely can count, you know, movers as one small piece, maybe a little bit more project manager in that workflow and not getting hooked up with a shady, questionable guy who's going to hold me at, you know, metaphorical gunpoint.
Well, and that story's unfortunately pretty common as well. You know, I mean, moving itself as an industry is fairly cutthroat. There are a ton of movers out there of all different quality levels and all different price points. And there's a history of them coming in and kind of undercutting their pricing, knowing that once they have you, they have you. And, you know, there's this idea that, well, I came in with the lowest price. And, you know, even if I know in my head it's going to be $2,500 more than what I quoted, we'll get them at the end because they're going to want to pay for it to come off the truck, right? Which I just think it's predatory. It's awful. Nobody should do that, right? Those people should be run out of business entirely. I actually quote high, and I do that with intention. And I tell people, I said, I'm going to send you a quote and I'm going to make it high. And part of that is because unknown things can happen, right? We've more than once been on job site and the client's like, oh yeah, I forgot to tell you, I have a storage unit over here that I'd like you to, you know, and you're like, okay. But I would always rather come in under budget and say, oh my gosh, we saved you $3,000 than come in and have to say, especially because in the process of moving, there are so many costs, right? There's the house purchase or the deposit that you have to pay on a place you're renting or any of that. There's a large outlay of cash in that moment anyway. And I would feel terrible having to go back to someone and say, I know you're really like in a financial pinch because of all of this money right now, but I'm going to need more before you get your things. Like, that's just not the way you treat people. Okay, now we found another soapbox. Be nice to people.
Step from one soapbox to the next. Hit it.
Yeah, just like treat people right.
Yeah, it should be a fundamental, and it does say something about our society that we have to say that, but Sometimes things worth being said just need to be said. Be nice to people and it's going to work out. I think, yeah, that's the golden rule.
Yeah, it really is. Well, it's one of the values and it's one of the things we talk about a lot as a team, especially because in what we do, our homeowners are stressed, And so they're at a heightened emotional state. Everything they own is being handled and literally physically moved by other people. And, even if they're moving for all the happiest of reasons, it's a huge transition. It's a new neighborhood. It's a new home to get used to. It's where's the grocery store that I go to now? Where's the, what's the park that I walk the dog in? Where, like, all of these things are already in the back of their mind. And so having to stress about the people who are handling their stuff, I can take that away. I can hold this one. Yeah. I can't tell you where to walk your dog, but I can certainly take off the stress of dealing with movers and that aspect of it.
Well, thanks for your time. Go ahead and shout out where people can find you if they've listened and they had a question that we didn't cover, where they can have a conversation with you or find more marketing information about your business.
Yeah. So we're on Instagram at Joli Residential, and that's Joli. It's the website is also joliresidential.com. And you can find me, Rachel Eisman, on LinkedIn.
Thank you so much for your time, Rachel.
Thank you, Jeremy. This was fun.